at 8:30 or so. It is time now for This Week in the Lakeville Journal.
And let's see if we can do this the correct way.
In the middle studio, we have a surprise guest.
It's not fair for you to talk about us and keep the mics off, I just want to say.
Well, I the mics are on now, so Ann, I apologize for saying that you were going to skip the 6 minutes today because of getting up and coming in and going, so I'm sorry.
You know, I get up very early, Marshall. So it's not that, and I come in every time I'm here. Often I have other things that I'm doing on Thursdays.
No. Yeah, sometimes no. She has work.
Sometimes
she has work.
Yes.
There's work. All right.
This is just being difficult. So have no fear.
Sassy. And the other person who's going to join us now is Janet Manco. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning. And, yeah, this isn't work. This is fun. So it's good that Ann does work.
And seeing as I've been saying it all morning, happy Thanksgiving to you guys.
So funny. Because as you were saying that, I was in the car daydreaming about my turkey. And I was like, oh, how should I do the turkey?
Well, happy November.
I'm sorry. If you didn't have yesterday as context, you wouldn't.
That's right.
You would think, oh, he's just, isn't that
just
sweet?
Just another day and a half in the life of Marshall Miles.
What a nice boy.
Okay. All right, let us go right to the paper. And, you know, I like the story, Cynthia, that you wrote, because one of the first things that came to my mind with the Millerhurst Blaze was the Belter Fire.
I knew
where
it.
They just plowed everything over at the end. It's just, you know, things like that are so big that they have a life of their own, and there's only one way to deal with them, you know?
I knew that you would remember that fire because a lot, even I haven't been here since the 1980s. I got here in the 1990s, but as soon as I heard about that fire, I immediately thought about the Belters, and I know a lot of people from here also did. And people who hadn't heard of it, I think it's a really good piece of local history and helps you understand a lot about a corner that a lot of us drive by, which is the intersection of Salmon Kill and Farnham. So Steve Belter, very difficult interview for him, very still raw and fresh for him, the death of those cows, which had to be shot through the windows of the barn. And it was when you could, you know, and of course you don't have the sound effects. Like, it's horrible enough, but when you think about what it must have sounded like and the smell of it.
It's just the emotional of losing a building, losing the animals, having the animals suffer.
Yeah.
And then after all that, the financial consequences that come.
Right, a huge change of life for that family.
You know, at least nowadays with GoFundMe, the Millerhurst Farm, people donated over $122,000. Now, that's a drop in the bucket to rebuild that barn and stuff, but people donated that much on GoFundMe, and I think there was another $10,000 or $20,000 off that.
Yeah,
and
in like a week.
The area we live in, so.
So when I interviewed Steve, he said each one of their cows back in 1985 was worth about $1,200. So it gives you some sense of what they're up against. And I'm sure that there's some insurance, but
not enough.
Yeah.
Those are truly disasters.
But if you are from this area, this is one of those stories that really helps you understand who we are as a community.
All right. After that, I'm going to go down because you have another story on a filmmaker making a maybe horror classic, maybe not. Who knows?
We had so much. My daughter is a huge horror film fan and was a psychology major. And so Anthony Ashmore, who's making this movie, is a psychiatrist in New York City and also had been in, I think, All My Children are one of the big soaps, and is now making this little horror film. He loves Halloween and Halloween 2. And so he's making a sort of like a anthology of 70s, 80s styles horror films. And it's all set here in the Berkshires. He is from East Hampton, but the family had a weekend house in East Canaan, and it was very spooky. You probably know what this is. They were shooting at the Canaan Valley Sporting Club, which is right over the line in Sheffield, and it's the coolest, eeriest, creepy place. And a guy named Steve is living there, and he hasn't really touched it since he bought it. And you can see what it used to look like back when it was, you know, a private sporting club for 100 people. Very cool and very creepy, and we're hoping that maybe there will be a screening up here when it's done. I think it's supposed to be done next summer.
All right. Just opposite that from Leon Graham, reasons for hope on climate.
Joshua Ginsburg, I think, is a person that we all can trust and get behind, and he's the head of the Cary Institute in Millbrook and a guy who really knows his science, and he's at the same time that he's not saying, there's no climate change, what are you talking about? He's saying there are reasons to be optimistic in spite of the recent climate report. So that's going to be a very interesting talk coming up November 9th as part of the Salisbury Forum.
All right. To the right on the lower side, the editor's notebook, Bernie Drew, Everyone Bit the Dust.
For those of us, and I know you're one of them, Marshall, who remember vinyl.
Yep.
He's talking about all of his old, not just 33s, but all sorts of odd speed records I'd never even heard of. And some of those records, it's like old magazines. I'm sure that some of them are worth money, and I'm sure it's a lot less than we all think.
Records are pretty amazing. I actually found my father recorded comedy albums, and they're still online. What used to sell for like $3.50 back in the 50s now sells for like $25. And I tried to buy one of my dad's albums, and it was $26.
Yeah, well. Which, you know, it's not enough to retire on, but still.
Well,
it kind of makes you wish you had them. You had enough of them.
That's right. Yeah. No, vinyl's great. It really is. It's not great when you have to carry it around, but for to have the classic, it is great. You've got an interesting story here that is strange. By Alexander Wilburn, just inside, a Salisbury man arrested for installing video cameras. This is something like out of a movie.
It is a bad movie. It's a bad movie about a bad movie. And we just got a report from the police, and Alexander wrote it up, and it was about a guy in Salisbury who broke into the house of a woman in town and installed video cameras throughout her house, which is super creepy. So, of course, we will not speculate on what their relationship is or who they are, but...
I shiver and I just cringe. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, so now let's go to our schools. All's well... it ends well with the Salisbury Central School renovation.
I'm going to let Janet talk about that if you'd like to.
Well, it is a wonderful project that is completed. When Salisbury Central first got an estimate for this project, it came in, a lot higher than what they ended up doing. We say $8.5 million, I think, they were thinking... this just isn't going to happen. So they pulled together a building committee, and the school board became involved, and everybody pulled together. And for $2.25 million, they've really created a whole new atmosphere in the place. So we editorialize about this, too, and it's a great change for the students, going forward for the next 30 years, probably. So,
and they've made it compliant on top of all that.
Yeah, which really is helpful, and it made their heating system function really well and efficiently, and, that's the part that you don't see, but it's super important.
All right. Right next to that is the Student of the Week.
The first one we've had in a while. And Ian Strever, who used to be the assistant principal, is still sending them in, and we had to change it because now he's the principal.
All right. Now, this sounds good to me. I've seen a lot of fundraisers, but I think a Taco Fiesta dinner.
That sounds good, doesn't
it? That sounds really good.
Yeah. It's like make your own Sunday night. It's just
Where
a perfect.
Is it?
It's for Lee Kellogg, and I believe it's at the Firehouse.
Yeah, at Falls Village Firehouse on Friday the 30th.
Right near our office. We could go right from work.
Let's go.
Yeah, 5:30 to 7:30. Well, if you want to go to these things, they sell out. I went for the lasagna dinner, and there was not a seat to be had, and there was not even a parking space. People were parking all along Route 7. These are very popular dinners, and for a worthy cause, and the food's delicious.
All right, and you've got the story of the Housatonic Athletic Hall of Fame, the induction ceremony taking place on Sunday, the 11th at noon.
So, and do read that, because they'd like you to come and reserve. It's free admission, but they've got... all of the athletes, I think there's like a ton of them that they've chosen for the Hall of Fame, all different ages, and there's going to be a meal in the cafeteria afterward.
Advice, cut down on the intro times, because when you intro, and some of the intros go for like 5 and 10 minutes,
ooh,
all of a sudden, you're there for 3 hours, and it's like...
The piano plays from the Academy Awards.
That's right. The big hook comes out. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, this is a great story, because it goes back to housing in our area, and that is Salisbury looking at short-term rentals.
So this is from 2 weeks ago, and we had held it just because there was a lot of... town news last week, and it was like a Sophie's choice. So we posted online the story about the short-term rental workshop in Salisbury held by the Planning and Zoning Commission, and they're going to meet again in November. And this is a big issue all across the globe, I would say. It's part of the Airbnb movement, and They've looked at it in Kent. They've looked at it in Cornwall. And I'm not really sure that anything has been resolved on any of them. They looked at it in Great Barrington. All of them have different concerns about it that they looked at. Salisbury was just collecting opinions from people. I would say some people seem to feel that generally it's okay and it's a good booster for the economy. And some people said, however, there are problems when the owner of the property is not nearby. A very good, interesting story from Patrick. Take a look at it.
All right, and I want to talk about more food, and that is in Kent, the Night of a Thousand Pies is coming up this weekend.
I know. I just love that name, the Night of a Thousand Pies. Right. It just sounds so good. But they've really kind of changed the name to Bakers and Makers, they're calling it now.
Because of the state rules.
Yeah, which is a shame. So there are all these state regulations about what is what you are allowed to cook in a private kitchen and sell at a public space, and I believe it's the custard pies they're not allowed to sell, which of course means no pumpkin pie, but they can sell some fruit pies. And it used to be that Patsy Strobel from the famous Strobel's Bakery, who is a Sharon resident, would do a pie baking workshop the night before the sale, and you'd get all these great pies. But more and more they're moving towards sort of an artisan pre-holiday gift sale. So that's coming up, but a really great beneficiary, which is Kent Affordable Housing, and boy, do they do a great job.
All right, now, interesting story out of Winsted by Shaw about they need members for a co-op to open.
This is an interesting story because I was talking to Chelsea Edgar was staying with me, our former reporter, and telling me about a story in Vermont about how they've closed down the general store and a bunch of people bought it and everybody's sort of co-oping into it. And this is what's happening in Winsted is they closed down the only grocery store. So somebody's trying to put together a co-op and they need, I think, what is it?
200.
We need to reach
300, sorry.
And eventually they'll need 800 to 1,000 shareholders in order to open the store at $200 each. And that's a lot of people to pull together, especially in this age of big box stores. So it'll be interesting to see how they do it, but we like their motivation.
Nice story on the Mad Hatter's Ball from Lynn Kircher, who won Most Glamorous Hat. Now, that doesn't surprise me at all.
She's a very glam girl. And actually, I'm proud to say I was a judge, and then I picked all these winners myself. And obviously, everybody else agreed. But I think that John Pogue was just the best with this big floppy sombrero that he wore. A really fun event for Habitat, which is really such a wonderful worthy beneficiary.
Meet the candidates.
Yes, we put a lot of work into this, as did the candidates. And so we have, and I'm happy to say we have six candidates from Region 1 and from Winsted. And of course, we cover also Barkhamsted, Colebrook, and Norfolk, which have slightly different candidates, but we felt that these were our major markets. What we've started to do is give the candidates just a very basic question and allow them to choose what they want to say, as opposed to us sort of deciding what we think is important from what they're saying. So find out their opinions on what the two most important issues are in the coming term, and also constituent service, because we felt that those were the two big things that the candidates were talking about, was how good they are with constituent service and what they think are big issues, such as guns. And also, you can get a look at the sample ballots. And people keep asking me about the write-ins. You can write in if you want. There's space for that. We do. It's not a toggle vote. It's a handwritten, hand-checked ballot.
All right. About 600 people in Kent for the pumpkin run.
So the pumpkin run is on two pages because we have on the family and friends. This is so cute. This one couple finished the race simultaneously. And then as they were on the podium getting their medal, the young man proposed to his young future bride. And we have a great photo on family and friends. But again, of always fun, the pumpkin run, lots of costumes, pretty good weather, as is not always the case, relatively warm.
And coming up this Saturday is the Ed McGuire Cannonball Run, number 18. Oh, it's hard to believe it's been around that long.
Yeah. Well, it feels like it's been around forever. And Bill Beebe used to always design the course. I think he probably still does. And he just retired as custodian from the Lee Kellogg School.
I remember the first one they held. Steve Blass was there and I was there. And they shoot a cannon off to start, yeah. Right? And we got the mini cannon set up, and I'm there, and we're recording it, and we're going like, and just as they light the cannon, this is no lie, a woman parks about 10 feet in front of it with her moonroof open.
Oh, man.
And the cannon, there was nothing, it was too late. The fuse was lit. Ba-boom.
Yeah.
that poor woman
jumped
literally,
her
head came to the top of the moonroof. And
yeah, some people need
it to was be just It was just one of those weird things. But anyway, I'll remember that to the day I die.
Yeah.
Okay. Rain and wind put a damper. The first Tour de Forest. Yes,
so that was out in Norfolk, and a nice fundraiser for their Rails to Trails initiative. But I don't know, pretty optimistic to do a bike race at this time of year. Apparently too optimistic in Norfolk because they didn't run it.
All right. So now, we go to the opinion pages. And there's an editorial, congratulations on a job well done, and Maria Horn is a choice for saving the environment.
Well, that is a letter, the second one you talk about. Maria Horn is the choice is a letter from Wendy Murphy and Debbie Bennett that we squeeze in under the editorial. So the editorial is about Salisbury Central School and the good work that was done to complete their renovations. Just fantastic. And so we talk a little bit about the people who were involved, and we thank them for their work. And even as this project is completed, they are looking around and saying, boy, maybe we could do this and that too. So we hope some of them will stay involved moving forward.
All right. And lots of letters to the
Lots of letters. And so what we did this week, we do have 3 pages of letters this last week before the election. And we have one column from Dick Ollis on the governor's race. And all the letters are on every race, including the ballot question. We have the Salisbury Association, saying to vote yes on ballot question two, read their letter to see why. We have the symbolism of the doughboy in Canaan, read that letter from David Woodruff. It's very interesting. He's a fellow who actually has done repair work on the Doughboy and really sees why it's such an important icon for this region and for veterans.
I love the title of Dick's story because I couldn't agree more. Who will it be for governor, the has-been or never was?
Because Oz Griebel, who the Hartford Courant endorsed, is a great guy, but he'll be a spoiler. He won't win, you know.
And the main two candidates, they're probably very nice people, but there's just no energy in that race at all. It kind of symbolizes kind of the disarray that happens in Hartford over the past 10 years. But
maybe we're being bombarded with ads that make it seem as if these candidates are, however, charismatic.
Well, we'll see what happens. But anyways, it's great to see so many letters and so many people involved.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens on the 6th.
We thank you all for writing. Everybody vote.
All right. Now, not your grandmother's $100 bill.
If she had one. Yeah. So Lila Hawken went to a talk in Salisbury about the Crane Paper Company, which is very interesting. It is up nearby in Massachusetts and is the company that makes the paper that our U.S. currency is.
It has been, right?
Yeah,
forever.
And really interesting because the constant sort of rush to move forward and figure out ways to stay one step ahead of counterfeiters, which is, you know, a huge big deal. So a very interesting story from Lila. And then Patrick went to a talk at Noble Horizons about 24 interesting Connecticut people, men and women. Interesting talk on that. And then held over Songs of World War One. I'd like to point out in this little box, Janet and I went over to GEAR yesterday and met with Kevin O'Connell and Stacey Nicholas about a very exciting piece of news from them, which is that very old, very not really...
It's GEAR Nursing and Rehab Center needs to be redone. They have beautiful plans, and they're going to repurpose buildings. They're going to build new. It's amazing.
So consistently people say that they love the care at GEAR, but this is, that building is so old, you really couldn't, there are rooms where 3 people are sharing the space, everybody's sharing bathrooms, and it's just not the way that you would really want your elderly loved one to spend their last days. So, and they know that more than anybody, and so they just got permission from the state, and so they're now going to be moving into heavy fundraising mode, and they're hoping very, very, with full heart, that you will fill out their survey online. It's only 3 questions, but they really want to hear from people before they start drawing up a plan and commit to it. Because as we know, what happens here is that people wait until the plans are done and they go like, wait, we don't want to have that. So this is your chance. They're begging you to weigh in early. Do you want to see affordable housing there, which is a great idea? They could put 30 residences. Do you want to have community space? Whatever you think you would like to see there, go. This is your chance to weigh in, and then they're going to start drawing up plans, and then they're going to start raising money based on the plans. They're hoping to have construction starting in a couple of years because they really need to, have a great, safe space for our community elders.
And the amount of property they have, people don't realize the amount of property that Gere owns.
It's 70 acres.
There's so much more they can do
with
that property to benefit the whole area. It really is amazing.
And there's a separate plan right now where the YMCA is trying to expand because it's been so popular there. So it's really, you know, Gere is really turning into quite a quite a sprawling and community-centered place. And, of course, Railway Cafe is the best. We love that place. But they're going to be building a new building because they can't, you know, the people that are in residence at the old facility can't, you know, they have to have a place to remain. So they're going to build a new place. So weigh in on what you want to see in the new facility and what you'd like to see done with the old facility.
All right. So now we come to Compass.
No, we have to do health really quickly. Sorry, Dr. Ginelli's retiring. We're all going to miss him, and that's it. Okay, I'm done.
I wouldn't mind talking about Dr. Ginelli a little longer because he's such a great doctor.
Dr. Ginelli was my doctor for a long period of time.
We love him.
He's great. He's a great guy.
And we're going to miss him, and I hope he's listening.
Yeah.
Compass is small this week, but I do have a big story about the author Helen Klein Ross, who's written several novels. She's a poet. And she's written an historical novel, which is set in a town that's similar to Lakeville. And on my headline, I wrote that she set story in Lakeville. And I want to apologize to Helen and to my readers because she's gone to great pains to say it's a fictional town. She does use her house, Hollywood, which you know is on the Millerton Road, that she and her husband, Donald Ross, have lovingly restored. She uses that house as the house that the novel takes place in, but it's not supposed to be in Lakeville. And anyway, the novel spans 100 years, and it's told from the point of view of an Irish immigrant. And she was inspired, really, to write the story from the point of view of the immigrant, or not from the point of view, but really telling the story of the immigrant. She was inspired when all the talk about immigration came up after our current president was elected. And it's set over 100 years, and there are really fabulous details. My favorite detail, which I mentioned in the story, is that at one point she had a character who was dialing a phone, and then she checked it with Theodore O'Neill, a Lakeville resident, whose great-great-grandfather built Hollywood. He said nobody would have dialed a phone in 1927. They simply pick it up and tell the operator to make the call. And if the operator didn't know where you were, he would ask, or she would ask, a woman called Wheezy Hannigan, do you know where Marshall is? And Wheezy would say, oh, Marshall, he's over at the radio station right now.
He's fishing.
Anyway, so that's my big story this week. And Helen will be reading at the White Hart on November 6th from her novel, so everyone should go. It's going to be a wonderful novel. And I have a review of the movie Colette by the fabulous Sophia Kaufman, who was an intern at the Lakeville Journal. Now she's become pretty much a Compass writer, wouldn't you say, Cynthia?
We're very proud of her.
Yeah, she's a very good writer, and she just graduated from college, but she's very wise beyond her years. And then we also have there's going to be an art show at the movie house, and there's going to be a talk about World War II at Noble Horizons on November 3rd at 11 a.m.
Okay.
That's it, Marshall. Thank
all right.
you.
And then we can look at the great picture of Bruce, or relaxed Bruce.
Okay, yeah. Does he look different? He's lost weight, I think, too.
He's just a great guy.
He's the best. And so there is in his office now an APRN who's taking over his practice. And as he says, really, most of the stuff that we do in that office, the APRN is perfectly capable of doing, but she's local and she knows a lot of the other doctors. She knows the other hospitals, so she can refer if she feels that something is needs a deeper look.
And then you've got a story on long-term plans.
Long-term healthcare is a very complicated thing. It's like health savings account. It seems like it's one thing, but you really have to look very carefully at these contracts. And so Lila Hawken went to a talk on long-term healthcare just to sort of see if she could puzzle it apart. And I would say I still have questions. But yeah, and a reminder that the election is on Tuesday.
Yeah, I was going to go to that. Now you guys go to press on Tuesday
at like 3 p.m.
But you will, if people want election results from you,
we'll have them by noon on Wednesday,
and you'll have them online.
We'll have them online by noon on Wednesday, and they'll be in the issue of the 15th, not the issue of the 8th, because there's that sort of dead 2 days. But I want to say also, Denise Merrill, who's running for re-election, does a phenomenal job of getting the statewide results by town online. So you can also go to the state, but we prefer if you come to our website.
That's right, and it'll be right there. No, Connecticut's great. And like in Dutchess County in New York, it's like days. It's like days.
Yeah. If ever. Denise Merrill's done a great, great job.
All right. Well, there we go. We got it all in.
Woot. Thank you so much.
All right. We will see you Election Day.
Okay. Thanks, Marshall.
No, 2 days after Election Day. We'll see you on Thanksgiving.
We'll see you Thanksgiving.
Bye, everybody. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal.